Good morning and welcome to Success Happens. You know, this show never ceases to amaze me because I love digging into topics that I know nothing about. So I heard this report, the story about, you know, cybersecurity, unmasking, all this stuff has been going on. And I thought, that's interesting. One, two, a little scary. Okay. And three, what does that mean to us, those who have been unmasked, who never asked for it? So I started looking at who do I know in my life who works in this whole cybersecurity world. And I found somebody, lo and behold, who actually I see fairly frequently around town. So I'm delighted to say that this morning I have with me Darren Wigfield. And Darren is an expert in cybersecurity. In fact, his title is Information Systems Security Officer, otherwise known as a Senior Cybersecurity Engineer. And so welcome, Darren.
Thank you.
It's really great to have you with us. And I know nothing of this world. You know, it's just enough for me to turn my computer on and pray that it works. Because if I have a breakdown, my whole world doesn't work. But when you think about what you do and how dependent we've become on the internet, forget computers. You know, the computers way back when, they operated in a silo called your home or your office. They didn't connect to anybody else, and you used them for typing or for reports or whatnot. And now today, it's such an integral part of our communication network that if we don't have it working, you know, things just break down. So the intricacy of your work is very fascinating to me and overwhelming to even think about.
And overwhelming how much we as a society trust the technologies to keep us safe and keep our records safe. That we take for granted just how vulnerable we really could be.
And are, apparently.
To a large degree, yes.
As recently unmasked in the news. So we're going to talk about that today. And we're going to talk about the ramifications of that on you, the listener, on me, somebody who relies on it in my work, and how we function. And, you know, I want to put something in because this has really been my mantra, if you will, for probably the past year and a half, is we must operate with integrity. And if you don't have integrity around your work, if you don't have integrity around your personal safety, i.e. your personal records, your money, you know, the things that we use on a day-to-day basis to operate and get by in life, if that stuff isn't with operating with integrity, we are very vulnerable.
Absolutely.
And there are people out there, I don't know, like the North Koreans and maybe a few Russians, who really want to get us. As they say down south, they're going to get us.
Yeah.
Right? So in their desire to hack and get into our information and steal credit card information, like the Target situation and all of that. And we had a great show in the past with Greg West, which you can find on our podcast, about this vulnerability of companies who are spending lots of money and probably some of them not enough to make sure that they maintain those customer records securely. But, you know, it's really up and coming. So this new news about FISA courts and 20 million unmasked and all of that is a bit of a shocker, I think, to us.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, the government spends an incredible amount of money on cybersecurity. Private industry spends an incredible amount of money on cybersecurity. But they also neglect in a lot of ways to think about what the real ramifications would be. Target lost a lot of face. Home Depot lost a lot of the public's faith in their ability to keep our records safe. And a lot of us just go to a store, swipe a card. Do we really consider what kind of information we're entrusting them? Not just that we're trusting that entity, Target, Home Depot, whoever, to have that information, but trust them to protect it so that others don't have it. There's a lot of complexities to it that justify the expense and the spending that companies put into these things.
Well, and I'm thinking about, you know, this idea, half my family's in Sweden. So in Sweden, So I needed to send my cousin $100. Mm-hmm. And he had done something for me and sent me something or whatever. I said, well, I'll send you the money. And I sent it in a check. And he emailed me. He says, we don't use checks here.
Wow.
Send me cash. I said, I can't send you $100 cash. It'll never get to you.
Right.
In fact, it did. But they also only use credit cards. So they only have that kind of transaction. They don't do checks anymore. So we're a bit behind, I think, on some of these things. And yet, if you think about it, what's more safe? Probably a check.
So we're behind in a lot of ways, and it's just because our industry for these electronic transfers became so thoroughly established so much earlier. That we have more infrastructure. We have more card swipey machines.
We're entrenched.
Yes. Yes, exactly. So it's really hard to get all of those different points of sale updated and moving. But it's absolutely vital that we do. There are a lot of very vulnerable systems out there. The ATM machines that are running on, you know, it looks like it's got its own. You don't see that it's running on Windows. It looks like it's got its own interface, but often it's an older version of Unix or Linux. And very often it's Windows in the background. And who's going around to the ATMs to make sure they've got security patches on them and that the default passwords have been changed and that nobody's tampered with them? I mean, it's kind of silly to even think that somebody would in a lot of cases with you know, they're sitting in gas stations all over the country or the where you swipe at on the gas pump. What's to stop someone from tampering with those? And we've seen people plant skimmers on these things where you can read the credit card, you swipe it, the machine reads it, and someone else is reading it and recording your numbers.
Wow.
There's a lot of that kind of thing going on. So, yes, we're very vulnerable.
Well, and I think about, you know, when I ran a nonprofit, one of the things we implemented was quickly swiping the checks through a reader, mm-hmm. so that we weren't doing all those manual deposits anymore. I mean, that was just painful. So we automated that and actually found it was a huge time saver. But when I think about ATMs, it's interesting you brought that up. I probably stopped using ATMs, I don't know, mid-90s. Because I never knew how much money I didn't have. I mean, you go in, you get $20. You go in, you get $20. You go in, you get, before you know, it's not a really good way to watch your money.
True.
So I stopped that habit. So now I just go to my husband, honey, can I have $20? But so I think that to your point, they're trying to put these things in place, the chips and whatnot. You know, I have some credit cards now that have these. They're so stiff because they have, I guess, metal in them or something.
Yep.
That does that block them being able to read it? Is that the idea?
So the chip card is it's a much, much more secure technology, and it actually has a little computer chip built into the card that does a calculation for you. So basically the information that when you use a regular swipe card, it sends your credit card number and some other information on the card to the bank.
Off that magnetic strip.
Right, off that magnetic strip. Just like you can read off of a magnetic old floppy drive or off of a VHS cassette that you mm-hmm. put into a VCR. That magnetic strip stores data. So when you send a swipe card, when you use a swipe card, it sends your actual credit card number, expiration date, and name to the credit card company. When you use a chip card, it encrypts all of that stuff using the chip on the card and sends a one-time use string of numbers. So that if somebody else is listening to that transaction, they're reading everything that you send to the bank and try to reuse it later to send themselves money, it doesn't work because each time that your card is generating
a unique
set of information that it sends over to the bank. So that's why even though somebody could put a skimmer on the machine, they could read all of the traffic going back and forth between that gas pump and the bank, nobody can reuse that data. So it's much more secure.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Never knew that. So that's fascinating. Well, so let's back up for a second. Let's talk about you. So how did you find your way into cybersecurity?
I kind of stumbled into it. So I was working. I was a student at Frederick Community College. I grew up here in Frederick County. Started going to FCC. Started getting I got an IT job in the IT department at FCC. First it was part-time, then they hired me on full-time, continued in IT for a while. And as I found myself, you know, we live near Fort Detrick and D.C. There's lots of federal opportunities around here. And working in IT for a federal agency, you inherently have to be aware of some of their cybersecurity rules. So I found myself interested in that. It makes for good stories, like the one about the card that we just told.
Yeah, exactly.
you just learn. It's interesting. It's really
interesting. It is
interesting.
So cybersecurity would be considered a specialty in IT.
That's the way I look at it.
Yeah.
A lot of people get into cybersecurity directly without having the IT background, and a lot of people get into it I was in the military or a government employee, and I understand government policy, and they get into it from that. Well, from that side, I find it's really helpful to understand the underlying technologies and the way they behave and interact. With my IT background, I find that very applicable.
Yeah, it seems like they would be hand in glove.
Yeah.
So for somebody coming along, and by the way, I have to just really acknowledge Frederick Community College. They do such a great job and obviously turn out terrific people like you who make a great contribution. So kudos to them. When you look at people coming into the field, of course, Homeland Security, some of these, you know, you now I think have degrees in that at Maryland and whatnot,
yep.
UMUC, a lot of focus around that. What do you see as the opportunity for young people today in terms of that field? Because I would think that's a pretty good field to get into, and that there are lots of opportunities.
So I've spoken to a couple of people who've approached me interested in pursuing a college education or coming out of college, and how do they get involved? A couple of things. One, and this is for any field really, get a part-time job even while you're still a student, either a job related to the field you're majoring in, or even if you're in the mailroom or something unrelated to the field but in a company that specializes in that thing you're related in. Get your foot in the door as early as you can. Be in the environment so you can learn not just the here are the A, B's, and C's of your field, but also here's what the culture is like in a professional environment where people do whatever it is that you're pursuing. So that's the first thing. And then within cybersecurity, especially in the D.C. area, there are specific laws that if you're going to work for a federal agency working on IT equipment, you need to be certified in the specialty that you're going to pursue. There are a list
of... For example, what would be an example?
So if you wanted to be a systems administrator, there are a list of... If you want to be a network administrator, they would say you need to have a Network Plus certification to be... But maybe that's the entry-level one, and then you need a Cisco cert to be a mid-level career, and then there's another certification for a
Cisco being
level.
A vendor.
Yeah, Cisco creates
So you go to that
devices.
Vendor and they certify that you know how to use their system or equipment or software or whatnot.
Right. But so the DoD actually tends to focus on vendor agnostic certifications. That way they can agree this certification will work regardless of what kind of technology the place you're working at uses. You're going to understand just the general concepts of how networking works because you got your Network Plus. So what I would encourage you to do is if you're going to be in an IT or cyber-related field is look up those required certifications, because you're not going to get hired by any government contractor if you don't have that as a bare minimum for whichever
field you want
to
pursue. So that would guide you on what course studies to take.
Right, exactly.
And I would assume even if you're somebody who's pretty savvy in this field but you haven't gotten those certifications, you probably could get them at FCC or one of the other type of universities and things.
Sure. The certification classes, the FCC does offer classes that will get you the experience to take the certification test, or you can go to other independent schools that aren't accredited to do college courses that just focus on these certification courses. And so, for example, I'm a certified information system security professional, which is a mouthful, but that's the cybersecurity requirement for the vast majority of the more senior cyber-related positions in DoD and other federal contractors.
Wow, that is a mouthful. Well, we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Success Happens. I have with me today Darren Wigfield, who is an information systems security officer working in federal cybersecurity. And it's a pleasure to have you here with us. And we'll be right back. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Xerox Complete Document Solutions and Sweeties on the Creek. We're scooping now. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Success Happens. This is Jennifer Charlton. I have with me today Darren Wigfield. And Darren is an information systems security officer. Let's just shorten it to he's a cyber security know-it-all. I say that affectionately.
Nobody knows it all. Not in my field.
Okay. Anyway, the voice of God. Anyway, so we were talking before the break about ways to get involved in the industry. How hard is it to become a contractor? Because I think that there's a lot of people who see opportunities. Maybe it's even to start their own consulting practice or business where they can apply for contracts, go through that RFP process, whatnot, which is painful. But, you know, if you get the gig, good for you. How do you recommend people go about something like that? Do you have any insight in terms of pursuing business with the federal government?
So I'm still an employee of a federal contractor. So I haven't gone independent and done that myself yet. I know that Frederick County Workforce.
Yet.
Yes.
Magical word.
I know that Frederick County Workforce Services offers classes. There's the there's a Fort Detrick organization that helps support small businesses because they have an incentive. They want more companies bidding on the contracts that they put out there because they want more opportunity to hire people. They want lower prices. So if there's more competition, the federal agencies, in theory, would
they get more bang for their buck.
Right, exactly. So FD, Fort Detrick Business Development Unit, I think is, or FDBDO or U, something
Yeah. Fort Detrick. It's basically their economic development office,
yes.
I think, on Fort Detrick.
Yes. So between them and Frederick County Workforce Services, they do provide a lot of classes and guidance on how to get into that field. How to do it as a person. You know, one of the big requirements is a security clearance, and unfortunately, an individual can't go and get themselves a security clearance. You need to have a need to know, which means you need to get hired by the agency that's going to sponsor your clearance before.
That's probably a really good thing, though.
Yeah, it is. It is. There's certainly a good reason.
We have people who have security clearances who, by the way, I'm just going to say it, haven't honored them.
Correct.
Okay, yep. So shame on them. So we don't need people just getting them
right. Just
to have them.
Right.
We need to make sure that they deserve them.
Yeah, but I actually. I taught volunteer a weekend, a lunch class at the Workforce Development Center about how to go through the security clearance process. And a lot of people came in thinking, oh, well, I'll just go do this and then I'll be able to go get these jobs that require a clearance. And it doesn't work that way. You need to have the job first. You can't just, as an individual, go and get the clearance.
And it's a pretty rigorous, process that they take you through to be approved, I guess.
Yeah, to be cleared.
Be cleared. And I believe there are many levels of security clearance, which some of that has come out in the news of late because there are people who are violating them. Shame on
right. Them.
No integrity. No integrity. Keep your word.
Yep.
Anyway, it's enough of that. But, this idea that need to know and you only get the security clearance that's appropriate for the work that you're doing or something,
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly. So that's another challenge is if you have a security clearance and you want to get a higher level one, you can't get yours upgraded either unless you get associated with a contract that's approved to do work at that higher classification level and there's a need for you to know that or have access to the facilities where people process those kinds of records. So, yep. And right now the backlog is huge. The OPM, Office of Personnel Management, those are the ones who oversee.
OPM. Not opium.
No, I'm sorry. Yeah, OPM, Office of Personnel Management. I can see why you gave me that funny look.
Yeah, let's make sure we got that clear.
So they oversee the clearance process, and their process right now for investigating top secret clearances is averaging 288 days, whereas they're supposed to get it done in under 90. So they're not hitting their target. They've got a serious backlog. So right now it's a very challenging time to get into the field, to get your clearance. But if you have a clearance, take care of it because right now they're in very high demand.
And you can lose that clearance.
Yes.
How does one lose it other than violating, obviously, your agreement?
Right. So that's the first way. And I've heard of people who've done pretty innocuous things, pretty benign things that ended up losing their clearance. So you have to definitely be careful about what you discuss. But aside from that, your clearance, so a secret clearance has to be reinvestigated every 10 years. A top secret has to be reinvestigated every 5. If you aren't working at a place that's going to pay for that investigation, let's say you left the job or you no longer require the clearance, then it expires and it goes away. The other thing is, so that's it expiring. It can also be lost for not being used. So if you leave that job, you've got 2 years to get another job that will sponsor your clearance. They don't want you off not being tracked for more than 2 years. Because while you're employed at a place that has a clearance, then you're also going to be reporting any international travel, any incidents where you've got unusual interactions with people of foreign nationality, things that might influence you. You're going to be self-reporting those things. You're going to be getting tracked, your location. You're going to be working with a security officer whose job it is to report on and make sure your clearance is current and that anything like that gets looked into. So they don't want you to go for a gap of more than 2 years between security clearance related jobs because they don't want to lose track of you. So if you've been more than 2 years, I'm sorry, your clearance is gone, even if you haven't hit your 5-year reinvestigation window.
Well, so one of the things is if you stay in your field and you continue to progress in your field, you maintain that security clearance. That's just good for you all the way around. The other thing I understand is you get paid more with a security clearance. I mean, in other words, it garners more, a higher wage because they are so hard to come by.
Right. So I've never seen any studies of that, but it seems to be true. Yeah, it's very hard to hire people for positions that require clearances right now because, again, if I was going to take a chance on you, say you came to me, I'm an employer, you don't have a clearance, but you have all the other skills and I want to hire you. So, okay, I'll hire you under the understanding that you'll get the clearance. We fill out all the paperwork.
Hopefully in that short window, which we know now is not available.
So,
right.
So now you're either I'm going to pay you and put you on overhead and you'll be doing paperwork but not able to do the job I hired you for.
Right.
For 288 days is the average for a top secret.
That's crazy.
So the other option is don't hire you.
Wow. So on that note, stay tuned. We're going to take a break for news and weather. You're listening to Success Happens on Free Talk 930 WFMD. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Success Happens. This is Jennifer Charlton. I have with me this morning Darren Wigfield. And Darren is an expert in cybersecurity and actually focuses in policy. When we were talking off break, you had mentioned that. So I thought perhaps you could share with people what you mean by, as opposed to you're not the guy fixing the problem, you're kind of setting how we do things. Can you distinguish kind of what your role is?
So my role is sort of an oversight role. If there's a system out there, say it's a website that the government uses to track who knows what, and there are servers and things that make that website work, there are federal requirements. It's called the Risk Management Framework. It was set up by NIST, National Institute of Standards and Technology, and all federal agencies are supposed to follow it. And part of that process is testing your own system for security flaws and then reporting those flaws up. So I spent several years as an auditor that would go from system to system, and I'd run a bunch of tests against you and give a report and then run to the next one. And now
And I guess, hold on. So they would pass or fail, and then what would happen if somebody failed?
The most extreme case would be they disconnect you. You are no longer authorized to – this system does not sufficiently protect the government's records that it contains, and we're disconnecting it and taking it offline. That would be the worst case scenario.
Did you ever see that happen?
I probably shouldn't comment about
that. Okay, got that. Okay.
Yeah,
okay. So in the event that they were to disconnect, what happens next? What's the next course of action?
So then there used to be an interim authorization, and that terminology has kind of gone away. Basically,
give you a chance to kind of fix it, or
you kind of have to start over, get everything locked down, go through another entire self-assessment, and have a third party come in and assess everything. There's always going to be a couple of things that didn't get worked out, and if you can't lock this certain lock, then you can write up, okay, we're going to lock it by this date, and that's okay because we've got these other three locks in place. So that's why that one's not really such a big deal that we didn't lock it.
So as a layperson here, I'm sitting here overwhelmed by what we're talking about, but I'm trying to kind of get it in really basic terms. So massive systems in the federal government.
Yes.
People like you going in to try and test them,
yes,
to push them to their limits, to find the chinks in their armor,
yes,
to make sure that we're secure.
Yes.
And on occasion, you'll find something and hopefully people fix it and it gets handled. But that's the purpose of auditing. Now, fast forward to Russia breaking into our systems or all these ideas that we have the bad guys coming in at us, trying to get into those systems. As secure as they seem to be, given the kind of work that you do, and it sounds like you guys are doing a great job to keep us secure, and yet they still get in. Can you talk about that?
So a lot of the systems that get hacked, or there is indications that they were hacked, it seem to not have been held to these standards for various not political, like Democrats versus Republicans, but office politics sort of reasons.
We all know those exist.
Right. So, you know, for example, people have been concerned recently, is Russia hacking our election process? Well, the election machines are run individually by each state. So the different states have to set their own security policies.
And not only just set the policy, but then they have to manage their systems.
Right.
And independently.
And not just those independent states, but the companies that are manufacturing that equipment for the states have to make sure that their systems are secure too.
And oh, by the way, if they're not, I guess they lose that gig next time around. So, I mean, it's in their best interest as a business to make sure they're doing this properly.
Right. That's what I was saying in our first segment. If you're a company and you stand to lose face because your system got hacked, it's worth the money. It's expensive, but it's definitely worth the money. And it's also, it's not just the money about spending a lot of money on the right firewalls and equipment to protect yourself. It's a corporate culture thing. If you have everything locked down from a technology perspective, but you have polite people who hold the door for anybody that walks up, then that means anybody can get into your facility and just pick up a hard drive and walk out. So it's not just about the technology. It's also about changing your corporate culture.
You know, that's always awkward. So you know, I work in a secure building, right? So if somebody comes up and they, you know, hi, how are you? Hi, you're supposed to know them. They mm-hmm. act like they know you. They act like they absolutely belong here. Do you open the door, shut the door behind you, and make them ding in? You know, I mean, it's
right.
Kind of like it feels socially awkward.
Yep, and I'm terrible. I'm horrible at remembering people's names enough as it is. So if somebody walks up to me, you know, in that kind of environment and looks at me like they're supposed to know me, yeah, I feel that pressure too. I have the advantage though, because when I would show up, I was the auditor.
Mm-hmm.
So they would know not to mess around. They would know not to
follow the rules. They need to follow the rules.
Exactly.
Shut the door, click in.
Right.
So I want to talk about this idea of.
And incidentally, just because you recognize somebody doesn't mean they still work there.
Well, that's right. And you certainly have situations where past employees, God forbid, can be angry and come back and do some really horrible things.
Absolutely.
So we have to be more concerned, again, about the integrity of the agreement for keeping our building and our fellow employees safe and our records safe than being nice.
Yes. And it's tough. It's not in our nature
to
not be nice.
Yeah. So, you know, but it really is. I'm sorry. I don't mean to be rude, but I'm going to have to ask you to click in, right? So I'm thinking about the gal recently, and I can't remember her name, who just breached security. The young lady, and you know who I mean.
She had a reality winner.
Oh, yeah. Reality winner.
Yes.
How could I forget?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, she looked like a psycho in her little orange jumpsuit. But how do these people, do you have any insights into why someone would do that? I mean, the psychology behind it? Because as a cybersecurity guy, I would think part of what you'd have to really deal with is the mental psychology behind somebody turning state secrets.
Right. And so I can say that recently they've updated the security clearance questionnaire the questions that they ask people to get their clearance.
Is one of them, are you nuts?
So there is a section in there that I had an investigator once refer to as, these are the Edward Snowden questions.
Yeah.
The ones that we've added since then.
Yeah.
And they try and look into they're silly questions. I can't imagine anybody answering yes to. Things like, have you ever supported an organization that is intent on the violent overthrow of the United States government? Things that, I mean, really?
Yeah, right. Do we have to ask that question? Yeah.
But
apparently we do, though, today.
Right. And I think that the fact that those sorts of questions are in the questionnaire speaks also to the kinds of investigations that they're doing after you fill out the questionnaire. Mm-hmm. So I know that security practices have changed in recent years to try and combat that.
You know, so you know, you and I have crossed paths in politics as well. And, I think about this idea of treason.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was talking to my dad or somebody. He said, when was the last time somebody was, you know, tried for treason? And yet, it seems to me some of these things that are happening are treasonous acts.
Yeah, and it's tough. So, you know, I don't know this reality winner person any more than, you know, I've Googled and read a little bit about what she was accused of doing. And it sounds like she was an adamant anti-Donald Trump person who what she is accused of having leaked involved the election that he won. So,
you know what we call that? You know, when we were kids growing up, we were taught
loser?
To be, yes, we were taught to have good sportsmanship mm-hmm. and don't be a sore loser.
Mm-hmm.
What happened?
Yeah.
Shame on us that we've let it go.
It's tough.
You know, I've got a 6-year-old, so I'm always teaching him, look, you got to, you know, you're not going to always win. Sometimes you don't win.
Right.
What are you going to do with that loss? Yeah. How's it going to make you stronger? You know, quick insight, you know, when I was standing in the Miss America program, mm-hmm. I'm in Atlantic City, and I didn't make top 10, and I was told I'd make top 10.
No.
I mean, there were several people who were running it, including the Charlene Wells, who was Miss America that year, and crowned me. She said, you'll definitely make top 10. I didn't make top 10.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know I was devastated?
I'm sure.
But you know what? I had to learn from the loss. We have to learn from losing.
Yes.
You know, losing can be a great lesson if we take it as the gift that it is. So, you know, I take that back to this whole nonsense around our president. And you know what? Buck it up, because he won and he's the guy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my point on that. And guess what? When Obama won, buck it up, he's the guy.
Yeah.
So it's no different. So that's my thought about that. But back to this idea of people violating their agreements to have America and their interests and their job, particularly in the case of somebody who could violate cybersecurity or violate state
national
secrets,
trust.
National trust. You know, you have you're setting yourself up for treason, and yet we don't even talk about it. Like, oh no, she's just upset. Yeah, I don't get that. Because upset, you know, you're still held accountable for what you've done at the level it should be held accountable, I think. So I struggle with that, with this whole cybersecurity, national security question. Is at what point do we say, absolutely enough is enough, that's treason, you're done.
Right. Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. I mean, as a person who has held jobs where I would be required to access facilities with classified information, you know, there's really never any excuse. There are supposed to be internal processes. If you have concerns about the way business is being conducted in your environment and you want to disclose that and have them looked into, there should be processes for releasing that information. I think one thing the government could do is create a a central way of reporting those sort of things instead of having each agency have their own whistleblowing protections. Create something that way everybody knows if I have issues with the way something's being done, here's where I can take it, where there's an official channel that can look into it and not feel the need to go and release it to the media. I think that would reduce it, but
and
who
I
knows?
Think to your point, Darren, certainly there are things happening in government that are unacceptable. There are people doing things as government, you know, agents or employees or whatnot that's inappropriate. So we should have a way to hold them to account.
Yes.
For their bad acts.
Yes.
So I have no issue with that. And to have and it seems this idea of not having, I'm trying to think of the word, when you do something, if I were to tell on my boss for something and to my HR department, then I can't be acted against. What's the word I'm thinking of?
Right.
So yeah.
If you're a whistleblower is the term, and then I'm losing the term too.
Yeah.
Ramifications.
Ramifications or revenge, right, of toward me because I'm turning them in on their bad acts. They're stealing. I should be able to tell them and not be suffer the consequences, right? Mm-hmm. So the idea that we need to allow for that level of integrity to be the standard.
Right. And I think we're blessed that we live in a culture, you know, more Americans pay their taxes than most countries do. We're more generous. I think we're blessed to live in a culture where people expect you to follow the rules. If there are rules that say the government can't collect X, Y, and Z data about American citizens without a warrant, then society expects people to follow those rules. We just need to make sure that there's a process for somebody who knows something else is going on to report it without violating the terms of their clearance.
Excellent. So that brings me to my last thing I want to cover with you, and that's this thing that came out in the FISA court about the 20 million unmasked. So we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Success Happens. I have with me today Darren Wigfield, and we're talking about cybersecurity. And we're going to come back and talk about this 20 million people unmasked. And this is Free Talk 930 WFMD. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Xerox Complete Document Solutions and Sweeties on the Creek. Scoop it now. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Success Happens. This is Jennifer Charlton, and I have with me today Darren Wigfield, and we're talking about cybersecurity. Darren is an information systems security officer, otherwise known as a senior cybersecurity engineer, and he focuses on policy. And we've been talking a lot about this idea of, you know, when is it appropriate to, you know, to disclose information when you see something that isn't right. Well, to me, it's you always say something. You see something, you say something.
But who do you say it to?
Who do you say it to? And should you be? How do you make sure you're protected? Because you're trying to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. And then you get into the Edward Snowden.
And how do you make sure the information is protected? How do you make sure that the American public that entrusted you to be able to have access to that information is protected from what you might otherwise be disclosing?
Well, and this whole idea of WikiLeaks and things getting out of into the public sector. Right. You know, that's a tough way to manage. Unfortunately, I think that media has lost its sense of responsibility around information and how to use it. You know, when we start to use it as a way to manipulate, control, or distort the truth.
Right.
You know, now it's propaganda, mm-hmm. And I think we have a lot of propaganda out there right now. So, and that gets infused with emotion and all this other nonsense. Like, you know, I don't know, I got to go to my safe space. So, but beyond that, let's talk about 20 million unmasked, because that's why I reached out to you. When I saw that story, and I don't know if they killed it, but it was on for a couple hours. Everybody was aghast. Like, are you kidding me? 20 million U.S. citizens unmasked in the nonsense of what happened in the fall when they were, looking in on, how's that, looking in on the Trump campaign, calling it national security, whatever. Okay, so I won't debate that. I have my opinions. But what the heck? 20 million unmasked. What do we think about that?
So I should start off by saying that I questioned whether it would be appropriate to even come on the radio and talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
But most of what we're talking about is based on a document that was publicly declassified by FISA.
Thank you for doing your homework on that, by the way.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
So because there are
– It's, in other words, it's not fake news.
Well, not only is it not fake news, because we find this public declassified document hosted on a .gov site, it's also – even though something gets leaked, something that was classified gets leaked by a whistleblower, leaker, whatever, that doesn't mean it's no longer classified. And a person who deals with classified information or works for the government, whether you have a clearance or not, you shouldn't be spreading that information any further, like coming on the radio and talking about it.
Yeah, I got that. Yeah, don't add to the
morass. So in this case, because we're talking about something that was officially properly declassified.
Oh, I gotcha.
That's why
you
that's
felt
why
comfortable.
We're okay to talk about
well,
that
and I appreciate that. So in your expertise, what does this mean? What does this mean to the American public? What does it mean to the government space? That, frankly, what does it mean to President Trump and the people? I'm going to do a little commentary here. I think we have to stop trying to undermine authority and dismantle our democratic process.
Especially and stop doing it out of political vengeance.
Yeah, and spite and nasty.
Yes.
I mean, we teach our children not to act this way, and yet grown adults are acting this way.
Yes.
And it's really disgusting. So, okay, so back to – okay, I got that out of my chest.
I'm with
you. All right. So now back to this 20 million. What does that mean for those people?
So I don't
– what's the impact?
Nobody knows who has been – had their information unmasked. So basically the accusation is that NSA – is collecting mass records as they're floating around on the internet, but they're only supposed to be
collecting... They call that metadata, correct?
That's what they call it.
Okay.
Yeah. But I think the accusation here is that it's not just the metadata. Because they're saying, oh, well, on American citizens, yeah, we're collecting metadata, but we can collect whatever we want on non-U.S. citizens. Even if they're allied countries, whatever. We're allowed to collect whatever we want on non-U.S. citizens.
We don't have an agreement not to unmask them.
Right. But as far as American citizens, you have to have a warrant. There are certain processes you have to follow before the NSA can get into their records. And they've said, Comey said under oath while he was the FBI director that, oh, well, we're very careful and we don't release this stuff. And the things that we use to collect massive data on the internet, we vet it and clear out any American records before we let our own investigators use that
data. Which turned out to be not so true.
That's where this 20 million came from. There was a contractor who says... He found those records and he tried taking them to the FBI and said, hey, the NSA seems to not be following the rules they say they're following. You should look into it. And the FBI declined and failed to do so. And now that contractor is suing the FBI for not doing their job in protecting the public.
Took a lot of courage for him to file that lawsuit.
Yep. And is he a leaker now? He took records from one. He took stole records from the NSA and gave them to the FBI. I mean, he's violated his he's not allowed to take those records from the NSA. No question about that.
Right. All in the interest of doing the right thing and holding government to account. You know, one of the things I come to believe, and we're coming up on the top of the show, and it's been great to have you with us, but government can't be bigger than the people. And it's so much bigger than the people now.
It's absolutely important, which is why you can't have spiteful leakers doing silly things to muddy the water over political issues. We need to have serious conversations about keeping the government accountable to the people.
Yeah, and you can't, you know, one of the issues with Watergate was around the, you know, Nixon and it seems to me we've come to a new age of spying on people through the internet. And I'm grateful for people like you who try to restore integrity in that process so that people can feel safe and not violated, you know, online.
Yeah.
So I just thank you so much for the work that you do. Thank you for serving in that capacity. I want to make sure that people, you know, go on to WFMD.com. You can listen live if you're out of area from anywhere in the world, okay? You can go into our audio vault and listen to podcasts. I really want to thank Sam Batali, Xerox Complete Document Solutions, Sweeties on the Creek for their support so that we keep the show on the air and have people be able to share their stories like you have today. And just really thank you, the listener, for dialing in every Saturday at 9 a.m. Okay? So we will say goodnight, goodbye, sayonara. Have a great day. And you've been listening to Success Happens on Free Talk 930 WFMD.